Not tonight. I'd like for us to consider what Solomon had to say about the fact that there's nothing new under the sun, and ask Sid to read Ecclesiastes chapter 1, beginning in verse 4 a while ago. But you know, the things that Solomon has to say are kind of interesting when you stop and think about it. He said, a generation goes and a generation comes. The earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. Blowing toward the south and turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses, the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been, that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this, it is new. Already it has existed for ages, which were before us. And one part of us wants to say, really? You know, and you can't help but think, you know, if we were to grab Solomon and bring him up to 2014 and show him the amazing automobiles that we have and trains and jet planes and rocket ships and people going to the moon and sending images back from Mars and the great medical advances that we've made and so forth, you can't help but think that Solomon would be impressed with the things that men have been able to use the intellect that God gave them and study the natural world around us that, by the way, God created and gave to us, and learn how it works, and then use those things, you know, and build tools and use those things to our advantage to make advancements and make life easier. You would think he would be impressed with that. But let me suggest that I believe Solomon is dealing with some aspects of the human life that are constant over time, that transcend generations, that transcend the centuries and the millennium. One thing he deals with in this important book that he wrote, the book of Ecclesiastes, is that we need to be careful about trust in possessions and pleasures. If you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, beginning in the first verse, Solomon wrote, I said to myself, come now, and I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. You know, sometimes we'll see somebody on TV doing something dangerous and they're expert at it, and they'll look at the camera and say, now kids, don't try this at home. And that's the first thing I'd say. You know, Solomon was in a unique position. God had given him wealth beyond imagination, as well as his wisdom He was the ruler of the Israelite people during an extended period of peace and tranquility on all sides. And he was in a unique position to experiment with human existence and human experience. And again, he experimented with things that no one should experiment with. And I would repeat again, don't try this at home just because Solomon did it. But he experimented with some things to the extremes, to the extent that we could never even imagine experimenting with heaping wealth upon ourselves and heaping pleasure upon ourselves. We can't even imagine the extent to which he did that. And yet, he was able to do that. And at the end of it all, he said, you know what, I look back on all of it and it was vanity and striving for wind. It was like trying to grab the wind and hang on to it. And it's elusive. And that was not the way to find satisfaction in this life. Well, he certainly did heap pleasure on himself. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and I think there may have been some pain and suffering to go along with that, along with the pleasure. But certainly he had 300 concubines. He said, I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure, in verse 10. Again, we don't need to think that way. We don't need to live that way. But he did that as a social experiment to find out what effect it has on the life and the happiness of men as they live this life. When we think about alcohol, he said he experimented with wine and the use of wine and what effect it has on a person and whether it makes a person happier or not. And of course, he could warn his own son in Proverbs 23, beginning in verse 29, who has woe, who has sorrow, who has contentions, who has complaining, who has wounds without cause, who wakes up in the morning with injuries and they don't know where they came from, who has redness of eyes, those who linger long over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine. Do not look upon the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your mind will utter perverse things. And you will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea, or like one who lies down on the top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. The person's in such a drunken stupor, he doesn't know when people are striking him and beating him. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink. What did he know about it? Well, he experimented, and he could tell his son, you don't want to have anything to do with this stuff. It's nothing but trouble. And then he labored for material things. He labored to amass great wealth and great possessions and houses and gardens and ponds. He knew what that was about to an extent that there's no way we can even relate to. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 8, he said, there was a certain man without a dependent, without neither a son nor a brother. Yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, he never stopped to ask himself, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity, and it is a grievous task. He knew, even in his day, there were people that got so wrapped up in trying to amass wealth that they just lost track of what their end goal was. Their eyes never satisfied. It doesn't matter how much they've piled up. It's not enough and I need to go find some more and pile it up. Solomon knew that. He knew that no matter how much you piled up, and he piled up more than anybody maybe ever in relative terms, and he could say, you know what, it's vanity. It's like trying to grab hold of the wind. It's not worth anything. Now, let's fast forward 1,000 years, okay, to the time of Christ, and see what the inspired writers 1,000 years later had to say, and see how much human nature may have changed. Paul wrote in 2 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 1, but realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come. There are going to be men that heap up pleasure on themselves. Difficult times will come. Men will be lovers of self, Lovers of money. You notice when Solomon was building all these houses, he was building it for himself. And I got these slaves for myself. And I planted this garden for myself. And I dug this nice pool that watered my orchards for myself. The whole thing was, how can I amass all this stuff for me, me, me? And when it was all said and done, it was worthless. It was worth nothing. These men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. There were people 1,000 years later who were lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. They were out for me, me, me. It doesn't matter who else it hurts. I'm going to get what I want. I want to enjoy the pleasure I want to enjoy. And forget about what God wants. Forget about my responsibilities to God and my service to God. They were lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. What about drugs and alcohol? Well, if we look at Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 15... Paul wrote, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit." Paul is saying, you know what? This is, life is tough. Life has potholes and pitfalls and ditches that we've got to watch out for. And if we're just running willy-nilly through life, stumbling through life, falling in all the potholes, and oh, by the way, instead of being sober-minded to where we're clear-headed, we can make the right decisions day to day, we're throwing back the sauce and our good judgment goes out the window. Now how do we handle all these pitfalls that we come across? They're irrelevant to us. We're falling in them and don't care. Sober-mindedness is just a natural part of the Christian. And that's why you don't have to take somebody to a verse that deals with not only alcohol abuse, but marijuana and cocaine and methamphetamine and whatever else men may invent. Doesn't matter. What the Scriptures are talking about is being clear-headed, being sober-minded so that we know what's going on and we can make the right decisions when they come along. It is absolutely critical to us as children of God. Well, what about materialism? What was the view of the inspired writers and our Lord in the first century? Well, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, that's chapter 6, beginning in verse 19, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and wealth. Jesus said, you got to make a choice. Who are you going to serve? And I'll tell you, it's a big decision. It's an important decision. Because most of the people in this life are choosing material things and they are devoting their lives to amassing as many material things as they can. And Jesus said, you know, moths get in and eat up the clothes, you know, and rust makes things deteriorate and fall apart. You're putting your trust in the wrong things. You're putting your trust in things that can't be trusted. Things that will leave us and we cannot hold on to. We need to put our trust. We need to lay up our treasures in spiritual matters. Lay up our treasures in heaven that is eternal. That's what Jesus had to say about it. Now, fast forward another 2,000 years. We're talking about human nature here, okay? You go another 2,000 years and look around for all of the people who are looking fulfillment in all the wrong places, okay? You know, if we think about pleasure, in a way, a lot of things have changed, you know? The invention of photography and printed material and the internet and television and movies, you know, the list could go on and on with all of the technology that we have. But all of those technological advancements, while they are not bad in and of themselves, have made pornography pervasive in our society. So pervasive that it's all around us. It's almost impossible to avoid being at least exposed to it. In advertising, they say that sex sells, and if you don't believe it, just watch all the Hardee's ads, because the company has decided that the way to get people into their hamburger restaurants is to make their ads just as raunchy and filthy as they can get by with without the modern networks throwing them off, and that's a pretty loose standard now. The social norm today is if it feels good, do it. I mean, that's literally the social norm. And it's politically incorrect to even criticize someone else for doing whatever happens to feel good. And it's literally getting that bad. And so we live in a society where the culture is encouraging us to loosen our morals, encouraging us to consider options. And maybe there's some temptations out there that are worth taking a look at and considering. But you know, in a way, things really haven't changed at all. Not really, not in principle. In Solomon's day, he had to write to his son and warn him about women who would try to entice him to do things that he shouldn't be involved in. There were people that were perfectly willing to get out there and dress pornographically to try to entice young men to their rooms. The pagan influence in that day brought a lot of bad things in among the Israelite people. And Solomon was no exception. In his younger days, he was faithful to God. In his older days, he had married so many foreign women who were involved in pagan religions that he began to acquiesce to their wishes and their religious beliefs and to actually participate in those rites and ceremonies himself. Some of the female deities in our standards today would have been pornographic. They were disgusting. And in the bad times in Israel, we studied about the divided kingdom. In the bad times when these things were all over the place, that's what you saw, was disgusting carvings all over Israel. As long as people have lived in societies, discipline has been required to behave properly among ourselves and with each other. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, you know, you can invent all the new technology you want to, but people are basically the same. And when we're living together, a lot of us living in the same society, it takes a lot of discipline for me to treat you right, you to treat me right, and for all of us to behave with one another like our God would want us to behave. Pleasure seeking in any age is vanity. And striving for wind is like trying to grab hold of the wind. It is worthless. It will do nothing for us. With regards to drugs and alcohol, in a way, things have changed. Alcohol is only one of the many mind-altering drugs that a person has to choose from these days. And there are criminal drug organizations that have made illicit drugs readily available to anybody who really wants them. If the price is right, you can get it. That's the kind of society we live in. And I'll tell you, our law enforcement folks have done their dead level best to try to stem the tide of illegal drugs coming across our borders and being sold to our citizens. But as long as there's a demand, as long as American people want them, somebody's going to find a way to get it to them, because people like to make money and some people don't care how they do it. Hard liquor is... And I'm not justifying beer or marijuana or anything else. It's all bad. But even hard liquor is presented as being socially acceptable and sophisticated and pleasurable and desirable. There's an ad running now on TV, and you've got Frank Sinatra on stage, and he's singing, and he's debonair, and he's the man's man. And the whole idea behind the ad is Frank loves Jack. No, not Jackie Gleason, Jack Daniels. Always had a glass in his hand when he was on stage. He was even buried with a bottle of it. Are you impressed? You think, I want to be buried with a bottle of Jack Daniels. But Frank Sinatra was. I tell you, it doesn't impress me, but I'll tell you, there are a lot of people that impresses, doesn't it? Here's this guy that is the epitome of class. And he was buried with a bottle of Jack Daniels. That's the kind of society we're living in. But on the other hand, things really haven't changed a lot. You can go all the way back to Noah, and it perhaps before, but I know I can go to the scriptures and go all the way back to Noah and find out that any man that wanted to get so drunk that he was oblivious to what was going on, he could do it. It didn't take Jack Daniels to do that. And men have had access to those kinds of mind-altering drugs for a long time. Drug abuse is self-destructive. It is self-destructive, and a life wasted with it is vanity and striving for the wind. That's all it is. And we don't have to experiment with it like Solomon did. We can go with the wisdom of the scriptures. We can let God teach us what's good and bad and what's right and wrong. And we can save ourselves a lot of pain and suffering and grief in our lives. Well, what about ambition and striving for material things? We think we have any problem with that today? You know, every person in this country today could take a copy of the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and read it and digest it and meditate on it and gain a lot out of it, because there are an awful lot of people that are striving for wind. You know, if you look at our work lives, automation has changed the way we work. You know, we are so much more productive. If there's one thing the United States leads in, and there's less and less things nowadays, but there's one thing we lead in is productivity growth. You know what productivity growth is? That's getting more done with less people, and we're getting better and better at that. You know, business takes off and unemployment stays high, you know. So we've gotten to where we can get a lot done with very few people, with automation and fast machines and all kinds of great things we've invented. The workplace has changed since Solomon's day. Business models have become so complex and complicated, sometimes the experts can't even figure it out. Back when we had the big housing crash and all the housing price, the bottom dropped out of the housing market, a lot of it went back to the fact that these financial people had created these new financial vehicles where they took good and bad investments, just kind of stirred them up, mixed them all up in one big investment package, and then people didn't know what they were buying. They were getting a bunch of bad stuff, junk in with the good stuff, and when everything crashed, it took the experts I'm not sure they've ever got it figured out, how some of those packages were put together and how they were designed. It has gotten so complex in our business world. Transactions, and Chad will tell you this, any number of you, Trip, it is a worldwide marketplace. It's not the competitor across the street anymore. It's a worldwide economy. And we can conduct transactions immediately in real time around the globe. We can have video conferences with teams of people in the U.S. and on the other side of the globe in China, real time, and discuss business, make decisions, and leave the room and go execute. I mean, it is totally different. It is amazing what has been done in the world of work and the area of business. When you start thinking about human nature, really things haven't changed at all. You know what? Honesty is honesty, isn't it? And I'll tell you, there were dishonest people in Solomon's day, and they're dishonest business people today. Moses and God even had to tell the Israelite people in Deuteronomy 25:13, "You shall not have in your bag different weights, a large one and a small one." You know what that means? Somebody comes up and says, "I want an ephah of wheat," whatever that was. Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. But I want some wheat. And so you pull out your weight and say, "Yep, this is my ephah weight here. It's light." It's light. It's not really a full weight. It's a light weight. And so you put it on the scale and you put some wheat on there until it bounces out and you say, "Here's your ephah of wheat." He's getting less wheat than what he's paying for. That's what God said. You've got one weight in your bag, and it's the legitimate weight that everybody recognizes as being what they're buying for. That's what you have in there. And in their day, there were people that were willing to use false weights to cheat their neighbor. That's exactly what they're willing to do. What about today? I'll tell you, Bernie Madoff, as far as I know, is still sitting in prison because he robbed thousands of people out of their life savings with investments that didn't even exist. And he knew it at the time. It was a racket. And he got extremely wealthy off of it. And frankly, some other people got wealthy off of it too. But there were people at the end of the stick. You know, when my dad was a kid, they used to get an old telephone, you know, ringer. And they'd line up a bunch of kids and they'd all hold hands and they'd start cranking that thing. Everybody started jumping around. You know, it was, I guess it was high voltage, low amperage. But I'll tell you who was jerking around the worst. It was the kid down on the end of the, you know, he's jerking all over the place. He's getting the brunt of it down on the end of the line. And I'll tell you, these schemes are like that. The guy at the end of the line is the one that gets burned, and there are people that lost all of their life savings because of men like Bernie Madoff. And God knew it, Solomon knew it, and they're still here. Human nature hasn't changed. Covetousness is still covetousness, okay? If I'm sacrificing the important things in life in order to gain the worthless material things of this life that are here today and gone tomorrow, it's covetousness. Okay, any way you slice it and dice it. And there were covetous people in Solomon's day, there was covetousness in Jesus' day, and there's covetousness today. If I'm doing that, if I'm sacrificing the things that matter for the things that don't matter, I need a new set of priorities. Materialism is vanity and striving after wind. Finally, Solomon said that even trusting in wisdom and knowledge is vanity. That sounds like a strange thing from coming from Solomon. That was the thing he'd asked for from God, was the wisdom to rule this great people of yours, and that's what God gave him. But in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 16, he said, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were in Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realize that this also is striving after wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Now, what he means by that last line, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you what, the more you know, the more responsibility you heap on yourself. And people come to you for the answers, and before you know it, you got a world of grief. You know, and sometimes, at least in the area of earthly matters, maybe the less you know, the less pain and suffering, grief you may have. But I'll tell you, he said, I've acquired wisdom to a degree that most people have never attained and cannot imagine. And yet, when it all is said and done, it's like striving after wind. And don't misunderstand, Solomon was not saying wisdom and knowledge in and of themselves are a bad thing. In fact, in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 13, he saw that wisdom exceeds folly as far as light exceeds darkness. Living the life of a fool is not the answer, okay? And that's what Solomon was emphasizing. What he is saying is that pursuit of worldly wisdom purely as life's goal is vanity. If that's what you're after, if you just want to be the smartest guy in the United States or the smartest guy in the world, go for it. But you're going to reach a point in your life where you look back and say, what a waste. What a waste that was to have that as my goal. Now, if you fast forward 1,000 years and look at Paul's writing, and I think I failed to put the reference down in my notes. I'll have to look that up. But he says, for the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are the called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. Paul's not saying ignorance is bliss. Paul is not saying God's putting a premium on stupid people. It's not his point. The point is there were people then, and there are people today who pride themselves in their own personal wisdom and understanding. And God designed the system to where those people are not going to be impressed with a crucified Savior. And people going out and preaching the message and trying to convince people of the validity of this man that hung on a cross for everybody's sins. We understand the value of that, but there are people in this world that are of the frame of mind that are not impressed. And you know what? God doesn't care. That's the way He designed the system. Men who are wise in their own estimation, who are lofty and proud, are never going to come to God. God accepts the humble, and He repels those who have a high estimation of themselves. The wisdom of this world is inadequate for dealing with the spiritual side of man and the spiritual side of life. That's just the way it is. And we can study and learn about this world that's around us, and that's wonderful. That's just secular knowledge. What I'm talking about is human wisdom. James talks about it, Paul talks about it, and it's worthless. There are men who are analyzing God's creation with a determination to leave God out of it. They call themselves scientists. But they've left the realm of observational science. They've gotten into the speculative sciences. And they are so full of themselves that when they come up with a speculation, they expect all of us to accept it as fact, or they're insulted. That's the kind of arrogance that God has no use for. And they will never come up with the answers to where did we come from, why are we here, and where are we going? And you'll never get an answer for that other than in the Word of God. No man's going to give it to you. In Colossians 2 and verse 8, Paul told those Colossians, "See that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the traditions of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ." Things really changed much since then. There are millions of people whose lives are devoted to following Buddha and Confucius and Scientology and Freemasonry, and the list goes on and on and on. And the more research you do into those religions, you know what they're based on? Some guy that got off in a cave someplace and thought to himself and came up with some nice things. And then people are devoting their lives to following the philosophies of some man that got it all between his ears. And it's worthless. It is without divine guidance, none of that is worth anything. There are millions of people doing that. It is nothing but creative imagination. There really is nothing new under the sun in the final analysis. God created us. He has always known more about us than we know about ourselves. He has given us an owner's manual, if you will. He has revealed Himself and His will in a form that is timeless. In its application, it is timeless. It doesn't matter what culture you live in, it doesn't matter what generation you live in, what century you live in. The teachings of His scriptures apply to your life as if He wrote them yesterday. That's the way He gave them to us. This will has been penned and preserved for us so that men in every generation can profit equally from His wisdom and His power. And it doesn't matter where we go technologically. There's only going to be one way to avoid living lives of vanity and striving after the wind. The last verse in Solomon's book of Ecclesiastes, he said, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God, and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." That was Solomon's conclusion. After all that experimenting, after all the pain and suffering he brought himself through those experiments, it's all vanity. We need to devote ourselves to fearing God, keeping His commandments. That's really what we're here for anyway. If you're here this evening and you're not a Christian, you need to be a Christian. That's the whole duty of man, is to fear God and keep His commandments. And in today's world, that means following His Son. That means being a disciple of Christ. If you're here and you're already a Christian, maybe you haven't. Maybe you've gotten wrapped up in some of the same things people around us get wrapped up in. And things that are just vanity. They are of no value to you. You can go to God and ask for His help to strengthen you. He will forgive you for any sins you've committed, and He will help you to do better. We'd love to help you do better. If we can assist you in any way, we would love to pray with you and pray for you that you'll be forgiven of whatever sin you've committed. But also we want to help one another to be the kind of people we ought to be. If you're subject to the invitation this evening, come forward and make that known while we stand together and sing.